When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank y'all for tuning in to Politics, Religion, and Whiskey, the Josh Terry Podcast, brought to you by Raising Grace Studios. Today, I have got somebody that I'm kind of wigging the fuck out that he's on my show, because I've been watching his videos and pissing my pants laughing for a couple years now. Probably the coolest ginger in the world besides, you know, for me. And that is Mr. Ginger Billy. How you doing today, brother?
Good, brother. How you doing?
Hey, I can't complain. What's the weather like over your way?
It's nasty.
Ah. Where are you from, by the way?
I'm from Union, South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, I appreciate you taking time. I know you are a busy ginger. And and I'm excited about this, dude. One of the people that folks have constantly asked me to get in touch with to do my show has been you. And I was like, you know what?
Ooh, that's awesome.
Bring the two coolest gingers in the world together. And we found out we're 33. We're both, yep. We was meant to do this.
We could call this podcast Two Gingers, No Soul if we wanted to. You know what I'm saying?
I definitely don't have one, bro.
I actually lost mine. If I did have one, I lost it in a card game in a ninth grade chemistry class because I'd done run out of lunch money. So I bet my buddy won it. So he's got two souls. I got none. So,
well, I hope he did something good with it because we would have ruined it anyway.
This is very true.
So, Mr. Ginger Billy, how'd you get started, or what made you get started in all this and to be just the phenomenon you've been on YouTube and social media that you've been, man?
This was all 100% an accident. None of this was meant to happen. Okay. Man, 3 years, I've got a background in the medical field. I worked for 14 years at the hospital as a respiratory therapist. Okay. Yeah. Now, I don't know what in my mind clicked that I wanted to do a video, but one night I saw where Dale Earnhardt Jr. had retired from NASCAR. And I was like, man, this is the biggest thing that's happened to rednecks in forever. So I went and got my dad, who's a big Earnhardt fan. I was like, hey, man, you got any Earnhardt gear? So he gives me this button-up shirt that he had forever and a hat, man. This old flat bill hat. I wear it to this day, most videos out on stage. And he looked at me and said, boy, let me tell you something. He said, you mess my hat up or you mess my shirt up and I'm going to beat your ass. So I put his hat on and I played this old sad Adele song. And that was the first video that I did. And it shot up, man. I thought it was something at the point in time. It was like 1.5 million views or something like that. And I started getting contacted from people and I was like, oh my gosh, man, this is crazy, you know? And then a couple weeks later, I saw where the romper, that male romper.
Oh,
I don't know
shit,
if you
remember that video, dude. You tickled the shit out of me.
Well, see, I saw where these guys were selling these rompers for men, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to JCPenney here in Union. I'm going to buy a girl romper, and I went and bought one. Well, I was like, just give me the biggest one you got because I got them wide shoulders. So bought one, had the wife cut the legs off of it a little bit, went out in the backyard and did that, man. And I wake up the next day and it's got like 8 million views, end up like 60 or 70 million views altogether. And I'm getting contacted from all these websites and everything else. And I'm like, man, you know, there might be something to this. I mean, I had fun doing it. I mean, people, just seeing the reaction of people, you know, and the fact that people liked it and they were enjoying it and they were laughing and people was actually getting along. You know what I'm saying? And everything man, that was the coolest thing to me. I'm like, okay. So that's kind of what made me decide. I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm just going to see what happens. And I never, ever meant for it to be a career. I never thought that it would be something that a year into, I quit my job at the hospital, you know, and man, I'd never, ever been on stage before. I'd never done stand-up comedy before. And I had a guy came to me, and he had had a comedian that I knew, and he was that he had signed. He's like, man, you ever done stand-up? And I was like, no. He said, okay, well, we're gonna get you in stand-up a little bit. Well, my first time ever doing stand-up, man, was in front of 4,000 people at the Gold Nugget Casino in Louisiana. Ooh. Okay. Yeah, he flies me out there, and he's like, you got 5 minutes. I'm like, well, this is a sink or swim situation, you know? So I get out there, and I do it, and I love it. I mean, it's the biggest adrenaline rush, biggest high you could ever have. And believe me, I've been high a lot. So that was the best high you've ever had. And that kind of started my stand-up career. And then the two just coincided, and I've just, for the last 3 years, man, just been rolling the videos out and continuously doing the stand-up. And now it's kind of become a challenge to me, because a lot of these social media guys, they can do videos, but they can't do it on stage. There's a lot of guys that can do it on stage, but they can't do it on a video. So I want to do both. You know, I want to be able to, I want to be real deal. Your Tom Segura, your Dave Chappelle, your Bill Burr. I want to be able to do that on a stage, but I want to be able to be my video guy too. You know,
me and you was meant to be best friends. The fact that you just dropped those three names, mm-hmm. you're a fucking, oh man. People don't realize what it's like when you get on stage, bro.
Do what now?
People don't realize what it's like when you get on stage. And when you got people cheering you on and everything, it's something that you can't teach.
But, man, it's also the biggest challenge in the world to know that you were on a stage. Because, man, when I was doing videos, I was like, man, I can do stand-up. You know, I make people laugh on a video. But you get on a stage, these people are looking at you and they're saying, make me laugh. And it's such an art, man, you know, to do it. And it just feels, I don't know, like the biggest accomplishment in the world to make somebody laugh at you in that stage, I guess you could say.
We'll laugh with you and not at you, because you get a lot of folks to get on stage, just make an ass out themselves. And then walking off, people's like, oh, what a dumbass. But like with your stuff and real good comedians, then they walk away laughing. We like Chappelle makes himself laugh at every fucking joke he tells.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, right, being the laughing at my jokes, not laughing at me because I, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's with your videos, though, dude. You don't make an ass out of yourself. You're funny, but you don't. There's a lot of people, you know this like I do, folks you see on TikTok, Instagram, whatever, that's doing these videos, they end up just making themselves look stupid as hell, and that's how they get followers or whatever. Your stuff is just like you're making a joke about something and people's laughing along.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, too. I told myself when I started this that, and I know exactly what you're talking about, you've got these people that they blow up, man. They blow up so quick, but they have nothing. It's not really talent. It's just stupidity.
Yes.
And they can only do so much stupid stuff before they fizzle out. Yeah, they're a big name for a year, but after that, They're not. That's like to me the Daddy Long Neck kid.
Oh, I hate that kid.
That kid. The guy that crew that runs around together. They look stupid. That's it. Like, you know, I mean, there's no comical structure there. It's just stupid.
There's no there's no substance to it. Like
no.
It's a one trick pony, is what it is. It's they found a way to do something. They do it and they do it and do it until it wears out. It wears thin to where somebody like you and other good comedians can change it up, and you can go from maybe talking about a romper in one video to, you know, politics in a funny way in the next. Like that's how people keep going, is if you see the same thing, if you hear the same song over and over and over, it don't matter how damn good it is, you're going to get tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and I mean, I like, man, I've done so many different things in these last 3 years. You know, yeah, there's times where I just go off on a rant. But there's times where if I see something funny, like, you know, them yoga britches I wore, yep. the ones that I...
Shit, that was funny.
Yeah, see, man, I want to do... It's like I modify these cars now. I cut that van into a truck. You know, the more things I can spread out and do, I don't want to just be one straight... I want to be able to branch out and do anything and make it funny. You know?
I don't know if you follow Joe Rogan at all. I'm a huge Joe Rogan guy.
And yeah, I like Rogan. Ooh, he's awesome.
And he'll tell you straight up, he does the MMA stuff, he does the stand-up, he does the podcast, the number one podcast in the world, and he does all these different things because he doesn't want to be a one-trick pony. He wants to be able to go do whatever, and I think that's what folks like you, I mean, hell, you've only been doing, what, this 3-4 years now?
3 years.
Yeah, we're both 33. By the time me and you are 40, oh, God, we're going to be fucking the baddest gingers alive.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, man. I keep telling myself right now, if you look, okay, Larry the Cable Guy, Bill Engvall, Jeff Foxworthy, those were your blue-collar men. Those guys were huge, right? And they're still big names, but there's not one of those guys right now.
Nope.
There's no – if you look around, I don't know, and I'm not saying – this is not a cocky way, but I can't really name any other rednecks doing what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying?
And you can't, and I'll tell you why. It's because it's not that they played it out, but they did a very good job of what they did, but they only appealed to rednecks. You are a person that your comedy, it goes over that line. It's where it doesn't matter if you're a redneck or not. You're funny in the stuff that you do. There's a lot of people that will find that gimmick, the Larry the Cable Guy, the Jeff Foxworthy thing. And as soon as they reach their maximum audience, there's no farther they can go. People from all different backgrounds think you're funny. You don't find many inner city folks or whatever laughing at Larry the Cable Guy, but I see them on your posts all the time laughing their ass off at you.
Yeah. And I tell you, man, I look at my demographic, and I've been very blessed because, yes, I'm a redneck. I'm from out here in the middle of nowhere, country. But I look at the people, and you're right, man. It's people from, you know, I've got 100,000 fans in Australia. I've got 70 or 80 in Denmark. And then, but the it's different ethnicities, man. You know, it's not just like you said, it's not just you white country folk. It's people just of all ethnicities, all backgrounds. And that is exactly what I wanted. You know, I want everybody to be able to watch my stuff and laugh, because it lets me know that I'm doing what I want to do. I'm doing it the right way, to know that I'm not just going after one demographic, because that really limits, you know, your fan base, especially when it comes to shows, ticket sales and stuff like that too. I mean, I want everybody to be able to come laugh at me. So, and looking at my crowds at these shows, man, it's cool to see the different types of people out there in the crowd. It really is cool.
Yeah, but I 100% agree with you. That's the right mindset to have. A lot of people just find their demographic and they go after it. You expanding like outwards on that is what's going to make you successful, or keep you successful, excuse me, and everything. You don't find people like that. Like you see right now, and it tickles the shit out of me. After the election and everything, you had all these people that blew up because they were conservatives or whatever for Trump. And now they have no content. They have they have nothing to do. So they have went from up here to just dive bombing.
Yep. Well, see, that's like you just said, and that's why I stay away from politics. Because, man, on my page, people get on Facebook and social media, and they spend, there's God knows how many of them spend most of their day pissed off about some political post. Or they're fighting on a damn keyboard, you know, a conservative fighting with a liberal. But they can come to my page, and it does not matter what their political belief is. They can laugh at my stuff because, you know, but there's one guy in particular. I agree with what you're saying with that. You ever heard of Graham Allen?
Yeah, I know Graham.
I like Graham. I truly do. I love Graham. I've talked to Graham before. But to me, these guys put themselves in a corner.
Yep.
When they go so hard into this political niche that they're in, man, once you're there, that's it, Bo. You're going to build a fan base, but you're going to plateau off at some point in time.
Well, one of the things that I say preach, one of the things I talk about a lot is I do want unity. I want the rednecks to get along with the inner city. I want the Southerners to get along with the Northerners. I want the Americans to get along with other countries. And the best way to be is how you are, how I strive to be. And that's where you don't put out a negative message even when you talk about such of those things. You've kind of got to be in the middle, but you have to be real about being in the middle. With Graham and some other folks, like you said, they've trapped themselves to where now, you know, I pray for the best for our country. And that means that who people that are in politics, they need to succeed so we succeed. And I'm not going to paint myself into a corner to where I can't root on other people or, you know, even like you. I believe there is a big enough pie for what you're doing in this world to what I'm doing in this world. We don't have to knock one another. We don't have to step on each other's toes. Why not fucking help one another, you know?
And we're 33 years old, dude.
Yeah.
Okay? We're adults. This whole fighting that I see all the time is so elementary, man. It's kindergarten to me. It looks like something a bunch of kids are doing out at recess. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just meh, and it absolutely solves nothing.
Nope. It's a bunch of kids that wasn't taught how to share is what it is.
Yeah.
A bunch of little greedy sons of bitches is all it is.
Yep. And it's from both sides, man. It's I'm right, you're wrong. And there's no, that's it, man. I mean, and there's so much more to life than that. I don't have time. I'm on this earth for freaking, you know, this long. Yep. I'm not going to spend pissed off at somebody else because their beliefs are different than mine. I'm not doing it.
Well, when people do that too, brother, it's where like, it's saying, okay, I respect my point of view more than I respect your point of view. No, we're supposed to, even if we differ, let's respect each other. And let's not be assholes to one another. Let's set an example.
People are so ate up with it right now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's why we need more folks like you putting out good content, talking good shit, making us laugh that don't fucking make us. You know, you're not making anybody pick a side, dude. You're just having fun.
Yeah, and I am, man. I'm having a blast. And now where I'm at too, it feels good to know that people see that. You know that I've done this for long enough now that people can know that they can come to my page and they ain't got to worry about, you know, getting beat down for believing in something or whatever. They can just come laugh at me wearing tight yoga breeches or driving a cut off Ford Windstar through some mud holes or whatever, you know.
I'm gonna have to come to South Carolina and you're gonna take me for a ride in that son of a bitch.
I got it stuck yesterday.
Did you?
Bad.
How'd you do that?
We got 32 acres we just bought back behind the house right here, and it's been monsooning for 2 weeks. So my buddy thought it'd be a good idea. He's like, man, it'll blow up on YouTube. It'll blow up. So, of course, we go riding through, and we're doing good, man. And then I hit one hole where a skidder got stuck, and she just sunk.
So you decided to take a van through where a skidder got stuck and thought it was a good idea.
Great content.
Oh, yeah. Fuck it. Any injuries result in that?
Nah. The old F-250's fine. I'm fine. My feelings was hurt just a little bit because, I mean, I was doing good, man. I was riding through the mud holes like it wasn't nothing. Then that right there it sunk me. Then 2 hours later, finally we got her out.
Boy, people don't realize when you are out mud bogging, you're having a good time tearing shit up or whatever, and you think that you're going to make it through something, and then you bottom out, it hurts your feelings worse than a girl telling you no.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. It does something to your ego.
Very, very quickly. What is have you been surprised by any, let's just say, celebrity or whatever reaching out to you? Has anybody reached out to you that's kind of just caught you off guard?
Not really, man. I've had the Hodge twins, which I think are really cool guys.
I very much like them.
I like them a lot, even though they're on there, you know, that they do the political thing. I like them two guys a whole lot. Couple weeks ago, I thought it was really cool, which I've had a lot of people reach out. But me being the big military buff I am, When I put the video out of the F-250 after I'd painted it like the American flag, Dakota Mayer, you know who that is, right?
I'm not familiar, I don't think.
Okay, the dude, I want to say it's the Medal of Honor, I think. He's like one of the only living recipients of, I want to say, the Medal of Honor. He was in Afghanistan, okay. I believe. And some of his Marine comrades, they got killed.
Okay.
And from what I think I read, he wouldn't leave them, and he ended up killing one Al-Qaeda member, and then I think he killed another one with, like, a rock.
Okay.
I mean, dude is basically a badass, you know. And he messaged me and just asking if he could buy the F-250, you know. But I thought that was cool. Somebody like him. The Hodge twins, I mean, you know, I don't know, man. I wouldn't say there's anything that's been, like, super surprising or anything like that. Now, my TikTok, I've had a lot of really interesting people follow me, you know, on there. But nothing that's been like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Do you work with any charities by any chance, any military charities or anything like that?
No military charities or anything like that. I'd love to get into the touring they do for them. What's that called?
Is it OS tour? It's something like that. I can't remember the actual name.
WSOSWO or something. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to do, you know, something for them or would love to perform for them or whatever. Cause I have people message me who's military or veterans or whatever and always ask, but I just don't know how to get into any of that.
I know. I'm gonna hook you up. We work with an organization called Mission 22. It's a nationwide organization. And we lose 22 veterans a day to suicide with mental health issues on average. And this organization not only raises awareness for that, but they come up with programs, and I think like 99.9% of them are free programs to where if a veteran is struggling with mental health issues, that they put them in programs and they help them and everything. And
good.
I think yeah. You'd be I knew that you supported military and stuff, but you being that passionate and everything about it, I'd love to see you like with some of that stuff. And they would love your ass.
Yeah, well, I have you know, I get several messages a day, and they mean a lot to me, especially with the ones that suffer from PTSD and stuff like that, and the ones that have been overseas and the stuff they've been through, and to message me and say, man, you know, I suffer from depression, I suffer from this, but I watch your videos and they make me feel better. It just means a whole lot to me, man, to know that, yeah, I'm making people laugh, but this dude here, what he's done, or this lady, what they've done for this country, and I'm making them feel better, you know, that means a lot to me.
See, that right there is the mindset that everybody that does what you do need to have, to be honest with you, is you realize why you get to make these videos and you get to do all this shit is, you know, because we live in the land of the free because of the brave. And, I get messages, but there is no way I get the amount of messages that you get. So I can only imagine how overwhelming and everything it is. But I definitely can see you just being so uplifting and helping so many people just by making them laugh and taking their mind off the bullshit.
Yeah. And man, there is times, you know, cause for the first year that I did this, I didn't get paid to make videos. I just made videos, you know, and then the second year that this rolled around, I started making money on YouTube and I started making money on Facebook and all that. And that's when it started getting stressful, was when the money came into play.
Oh, yeah.
I started making money. And I have to tell myself a lot, man. I have to tell myself when I get stressed, I'm like, dude, you know, you started all this not making a dime to make people happy. So quit crying and whining about how much money you've made this month, you know, I've been very, very blessed to make the money I'm making. And I'm so competitive. I always want to make more every month. And that's the stress. I want to be the best. I want to make the most money I've ever made. But I have to kick myself in the nuts every now and again, like, Hey, remember why you're actually doing this. So but yeah, it's just been a blessing, man. I get to raise my kid, man. I get to be home with my son every day. You know, how many dads get to do that? I mean,
yeah, my daughter's 9, and it is the biggest blessing out of all of this stuff, from the podcast and working in radio and everything, that I've got to be in more of her life than most of my friends are to their children. And I'm telling you, that alone in itself is payment enough for trying to come up with content and trying to come up with good guests and everything on the show. It's the fucking world to me, dude.
Yeah, it is to me too, man, because the first 2 years of his life, I was touring, man. I probably did 150 shows or more. So I was working at the hospital full-time 3 nights a week, and I was touring the other 3. So I would come directly home from tour and go back to work. So for his first 2 years of his life, man, I didn't get to see him much. And then when I got rid of this manager that I had and I started managing everything on my own, now when I do shows, him and my wife come with me. He walks me out every show. He walks me out. He ain't got no shirt on. He walks out in his little Daisy Dukes. He got his little hat on. So he walks me out every show. He gets to feel the pump of the crowd. And that's my dog barking. But, hey. But, yeah, man, I've been very fortunate to have him tag along, because I want him to grow up like, man, I did so much cool stuff. You know, Daddy brought, I mean, the places we get to go. And there's somebody at my door. Hold on 1 second.
No, you go ahead, brother.
Better not be the police.
Oh, shit. They're probably looking for me if they are.
Oh, this is a fella looking for his dog. I'm on a podcast right now. Yeah, you good. Hey, you can either get her. She's laying right here. You don't want to sell her, do you? I'll buy her from you. I'll buy her from you.
I'm thinking you would.
I will. Beckett loves her. Sorry, hold on.
No, you're good. Right. This is funny.
He's all laid on the couch, won't get up. I'm like, what's wrong with you, Buck? Where's your sister at?
Here she is. Right here.
Oh, man. No,
we found her yesterday. This is the puppy right here, as you can see. We didn't realize it was our neighbors. Yeah. Didn't realize it was our neighbors. I didn't took another dog. I was like, this is my dog now. And then he messaged me and he was like, hey, man, I think that's my dog. So he's here to get her. Yeah, you don't want her. I mean, I'll buy her, man. She's a sweet dog. Beckett was like, please don't let him take her.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's laying there. She was laying on the couch with him this morning. I apologize for his inconvenience.
This is hilarious. This is good.
I'm sorry.
Diesel, be quiet. All right, you come visit. Okay.
You come back up here.
You can come anytime.
Special spa treatment.
Yeah, she's peeing on your coat. Or is that just rain? Might be a little excitement urination going on.
What is it?
It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, now I'm gonna tell you, man. She's sweet, bro. You got a good dog.
She's real sweet. She's had me worried, man. Yeah. She really has. Cause like when we brought her home, that first week that she was home was real bad. She didn't want to be around anybody. Cause I normally bring her in the bedroom at night, and I couldn't even get her to come up on the bed.
Well,
and then walked her off dry food. Anna, Gil's girlfriend, ended up telling us to switch to canned food, and she started eating that fine.
Okay, well, the food we got, she ate like a champ. So I can tell you whatever, but yeah, if you get her up there and you decide you're like, hey, I wanna sell her.
All right,
love you, pup.
All right, come on, baby.
See you, bud.
See you, man.
Thank you.
Yep.
Well, I knew we'd have a first of something with you on the podcast today, but I didn't realize it was going to be, you know, Ginger Billy's dog kennel today.
Yeah, man, look, when an animal is, you know, stray or something, God puts a big arrow right at my house. And he says, hey, little animal, would you like to have a good home? And they show up at my house. That dog right there, man, she was a puppy. We went over to my mama's yesterday, and she come running up. And she was skinny, man. She was skinny, she was bony, and apparently she done run off and hadn't ate in a week. So, of course, I adopted her already. But it's the neighbor's dog, so my son is going to be pissed. He is not going to be happy about this.
Well, y'all did a good thing by taking the pup in.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. That would happen during my podcast.
No, I fucking love it. No, That's one of the things about like my show, dude, is I try to just put real out there for real people. And I had a feeling like when I look at your stuff and like us messaging back and forth before this, like I knew you were a real dude. And just even how you treated that guy, man, I appreciate that. And I know the people that love you appreciate you be acting like that.
Well, man, you know, that's actually honestly why I got away from the whole the manager I was with was because, dude, it was like they didn't, this production company didn't want you to be who you were.
Yeah.
You know, I was even told, hey, you're not just somebody, you're more than that. You know, like with meet and greets, man, with meet and greets people, I don't like making people pay for meet and greets, dude. I figure if you come to my show and you pay $25-$35 for a ticket, you should not have to pay any more money to take a picture with me. And this was something that they, oh no, no, you know what? They've got to pay money. If you don't do it, blah, 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 blah. And there's just, you know, it's just not all, like I said, I have to talk myself back about the money thing. It's not all about the money, man. It's the fact that the last 2 years I've gotten to be me, and I haven't had somebody tell me what to do. And I get to do what I want to do. I manage myself. I manage my shows. I manage my social media. Everything has grown exponentially because people, I think, see the authenticity. You know, it's not, you know, this is just my life, man. I don't want you thinking I'm a superstar. I don't want you thinking I'm Hollywood. I'm just some dude. Well, you know,
that's probably why you resonate with people so much, though. And I'm sure it's grown more since you didn't have a manager, because you quit having to ask, hey, can I post this? Do you think this is good if I can post this, or whatever you would do? Because then you just get to be you. And that's how somebody really connects, is when they like us for us. You know, they're going to love you as long as you stay true to you. The second they start thinking you're fake or you're a sellout, oh, you're going downhill, and you're going down quick.
And I've seen it happen very, very quickly to a good many of people, because basically that exact reason. they're not themselves anymore, man. They're not. They don't get to be themselves. And it's not because of them per se. It's because of who's telling them what to do.
Yep.
You know?
How come there's not a Ginger Billy podcast, by the way?
Dude, you know, I thought about doing that, but to me, there's so many podcasts now. Now, if I'd have hit it maybe 4 years ago, I guess, but I feel like the market is so saturated with podcasts that I would want to come with something that people have never done before, never seen before. I don't want to just do what everybody else is doing. You know, I've tried to think of ideas and stuff like that, but nothing has hit me to the point to where I'm like, it's worth my time.
No, I'm telling you. All right, so it is saturated, but people like you, it blows up. It blows up overnight. And it wouldn't take anything more than you doing an episode or two a week and you having some reaching out to folks on social media or whatever. Hell, I'd help you with it. You'd strike gold in no time. And it's just because people want to hear. I mean, think about your videos. Your videos, as you like to call them. Your videos are what? What's the longest video you've done?
3 minutes.
All right. Saying like your TikToks are less than a minute, right?
Oh, yeah, man. They like 15 seconds to a minute.
There's people starving to hear what Ginger Billy's got to say. If you've got that many folks that follow you for that short amount of time, Oh, my God. You don't have to do anything different. That's the thing. Watching a podcast or listening to a podcast is the same thing as what you put out on social media. All you got to do is be you. That is the authentic thing. That is the different thing. You don't have to talk about, like, I named mine Politics, Religion, and Whiskey because I wanted to name it for all the shit I got fired for.
Better than you know, the name of your podcast being like, groping and inappropriate talking or something
I could have come up with some dumbass names, but I tried to market it the right way. But no, dude, you would hit a home run over fucking night with it.
But you know, one thing I've noticed too, though, a lot of these guys do this because now, like I said, you know, Facebook pays, right?
Yeah.
And I noticed, like, a lot of these guys before Facebook paid, they put out a video maybe once or twice a week. Okay. Yeah. But now they've gotten greedy. And I see guys posting 3 to 4 videos a day. And dude, you can look at their following. Their following has dropped because people don't want to see you that many times a day.
Nope.
Okay. It's just, it's obvious that you're being greedy is what it is. And you can look at their views are dropping off. I mean, their fans are dropping off. But to me, I like to post once, maybe twice a week, because to me, that's not too much. You know what I'm saying? People say, oh, well, I wonder what he's up to. And they want to tune in to see what you're doing. What? You know, I don't want to smother people, I guess you would say.
I 100% agree with you on that. And when you get these folks that are posting so much, not only do their views drop, but the level of their content drops.
Sucks.
If you will take the time to do a video or two a week and you actually think about it first, it's just like writing a skit or anything like that, dude. Take your time with it. Perfect it first. Then do it. If you jump the gun and you're posting 4 a day or whatever a day, you're not thinking shit through. And then
garbage.
Yeah, it's garbage. 5 days later, you're like, fuck, I could have made that better.
Yeah, but see, these people don't care, man. And see, that's the thing with, like, with my videos, if I don't think it's going to get at least 1 million views, I don't post it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look, every one of my videos on my Facebook has got at least 1 million views. And that, man, I will record and record and record, and I'll be like, I'm not posting. I will record all day. I will edit it, and I'll look at the video. I'm like, nah, that's garbage, and I'll delete it. I mean, I've gotten to the point now to where I critique myself so much that it's almost a bad thing sometimes.
I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think that you have the right mindset. You would rather put out quality than quantity.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather me get a video out and get 5 million views and make that chunk of money than me have to make 10 videos that ain't worth a crap to make the same amount. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you're actually intelligent. I mean,
well,
you're not well, greedy, and you're smart.
Yeah, I do think things through. And yeah, the greed I'm seeing, man, I've seen it so much. The greed, it's destroying people, man. I mean, it's destroying their content. It's destroying their pages. Between the greed and just the fame, the internet fame. It's like, bro, you ain't Tom Cruise. You know, just the way they want to act because they got a little bit of a following on Facebook or on social media, plus the money. It ruins people. I've seen it a lot.
Well, it's people who they probably start off getting a little notoriety from being themselves. And then once that kind of wore off because it was wearing thin, then they start trying to do what you do or somebody else does. And then they become unauthentic. And then when that happens, it's just all fucking downhill. And it's a joke. They start losing money, so they start trying harder. And when you start trying harder at this, the second you start putting too much pressure on yourself to be funny or entertaining, you're screwed.
Yep. You're not funny. When you're trying to be funny and you're pushing yourself, you know, that's when people can tell, you know.
You become cringy and weird and that fucking weird kid real quick, like.
Yep. But I'm going to tell you, man, you know, being in 3 years now, every time I release a video, I'm like, well, there goes that idea. Now what? It gets harder. You know what I'm saying? Like, it gets harder and harder and harder because it is just, what can I do now? What can I do that nobody else has done? I mean, 1 billion videos get posted. You know, they get posted every day. So it's like, you've got to be authentic without somebody saying, oh, you copying that guy. You know, it gets very stressful to try to make sure you're authentic. Or you can just be like these people who aren't. And they
I have a notepad in my phone, and every time I come up with a good idea, whether it's for the show or whatever, I write it down, and then I'll go back and I'll read through them, and I'll weed out the good ideas and and everything. I about imagine you probably do something like that, don't you? Because you probably are like, when you get an idea that's something funny, you probably can't act on it right then, but you want to set it back.
Yeah, dude, I got like probably about 40 yellow notepads laying around the house. I mean, just laying. all around the house. So I'll walk through and I'm like, oh, idea. And I'll just find a notepad and I'll write it down. But man, my brain works so weird. Like I will not have an idea for, 2 weeks, man. And then all of a sudden it'll be like, hey, this, and this. That was like, you know, I came up with the F-250 van truck, or I turned it into a tater tank. So I had those ideas. Then I had the lawnmower dirt bike video. You know, it was like these great ideas back to back to back. And that's how my brain works. It's like, okay, I got to rest for a minute. Just give me a couple weeks. And then it'll be like, hey, let's do this, and this. And then I'll pop them out. And then it'll be like, all right, I got to sleep again.
Well, you know? I'll tell you one thing. It all really depends, too. And you have to know this because you've been on tour with extremely funny people. Creativity drives creativity. So when you're in like a place where kind of folks are negative or nobody's really got your mindset, you probably don't come up with a lot. But when you're around other people and they're firing off their shit, you probably are firing at full cylinders.
Dude, I never have anybody.
Me and you got to become better friends, bro.
Look, let me show you something, okay? You ready?
Yeah.
You see my neighbors? Okay, I have like nobody in my county. You know, I mean, I don't really have anybody to bounce ideas off, man. Everything that I've ever come up with, it's just, you know, I mean, I would love like, but like you said, now there's been times where, you know, I've been around other people, and yeah, when you get a little bit of a help, a little bit of spark, man, it's like that, but 99.9% of the time I'm, you know, it's just me. I don't have time to meet with anybody. My schedule is so darn hectic every day that it's just basically me laying in the bed every night with my brain saying, okay, what can we do? You know, but I mean, it's got me this far. So I guess it just working.
You're doing fucking great, dude. You're doing, I promise you, you have got, it's just something. And like, you've been around these folks just like I have. You've got something you can't teach. You've got something that even at 33 years old, you know, you're doing what you're doing, I'm doing what I'm doing, and we're really driving ourselves. And for most folks that are in our shoes, they're relying on other people to help them. But you can tell with you, dude, you've got a game plan. You're sticking to it. It's working for you. As long as you don't veer off your game plan and you keep being the funny son of a bitch that you are, you're fucking golden.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was blessed to be an only child, which helped me with an imagination. You know, I lived out in the middle of nowhere when I was little. There was no kids around, so I really had to use my imagination. I had like 14 imaginary friends, you know. So I think I chalk it up to that partially. But I don't ever see me, I guess you could say, veering off this course. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know why my mind works the way it does. I don't have a clue of why these ideas come up, but I'm thankful they do. You know, it could be the 6 years I spent on pills.
I was gonna ask you about that tattoo and if it had a real meaning, because it looked like it.
Oh yeah, it's got a meaning. Yeah, man. My early 20s. Let's say I'm 33 now. About 21, I fell in love with pain meds. But you know, the crazy thing was, man, it was me and all my friends at the same time, which is how it seems to happen. All of us, all me and my good buddies, we all got addicted to painkillers, but nobody ever knew except for the people who dealt the drugs to me and my friends that I would get high with. Nobody ever knew outside that little circle, man. I kept it secret for 6 years. I mean, I held down a job at the hospital in the medical field, you know, but I mean, it was to the point where I was snorting 8 to 10, 30 milligram oxycodone up my nose a day.
Woo.
Yeah. Yeah. I was high.
Yo, no very, shit.
Yeah. But 6 years of that, man, I finally, you know, I cleaned up. I realized I was growing up. You know, I was getting older, and I had to either – I was either – a lot of my friends was either in jail or they had overdosed. Or, you know, a good many people I knew were dead because of that. A good many of them I knew was in jail, and I somehow, fortunately, never got arrested. And, of course, I never died. So that was when I was like, yeah, it's time to clean up. And I went and got help, and – you know, 8 years later, here I am. But I think that's got a lot to do with, I think it changed my brain chemistry.
Dude, it's a lot of shit. So I didn't go through the pills. I battled with depression and anxiety most of my life. I didn't know it until I had a suicide attempt in 2010. And that was the best and worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life. When I came out the other side of it, I completely changed my train of thought on a lot of stuff. And my daughter's name is Gracie because after I pretty much swore to myself that I was not going down that road again, I was going to deal with my depression and all this stuff. She was born about 9 months later after the whole thing. That's why I call her my saving grace.
And hey, it's all.
Thank you, sir. And so I felt like it was my mission the past, ever since I've got this platform the past couple of years with being in radio and other things, to where I want to share my story and my battles with depression because I want to help people. Folks here in, especially, I'm over 33, dude. The fact that was years ago for both of us is so helpful for people to hear that we're human, especially somebody as big as you. It's going to help somebody. Like, I'm sure you share it a good bit anyway. But
man, I share it on stage. I mean, it's part of my set. You know.
I mean, it helps so many people. And as much as we probably like the money and we like everything else comes with it, you seem like you have an extremely big heart. And being able to help others by telling our story, that means more to me than anything else. And I think that's why we are succeeding in things, is because most folks wouldn't open up about that, dude. Most folks wouldn't say, hey, I used to snort 30 Roxycontins a fucking every couple of days up my nose.
Yeah. Well, my mama was not happy when I made the video and posted on Facebook. My mama is the best woman in the whole entire world, man. She was a single parent. My daddy at 2 years old, the dude, you know, was, I mean, into drugs, into alcohol, and she took me out of that situation, raised me as good as she could, which she did an amazing freaking job. And she had me in church every morning, Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday. And she had never done alcohol, never smoked or anything. So when I came out about that, especially when I came out to it in the public, you know how it is, man. She was, oh, you know, people didn't know that. You had a lot of people didn't know that. I'm like, I don't care. I mean, look at me. Look, I'm trying to show people that, yes, I was an addict for 6 years. I was broke for 6 years, high for 6 years. But now look where I'm at.
Yeah, it's not about how you start or even the road that you're on. It's about how you end. And, man, that's inspirational to so many because, you know, there's somebody out there that watches your stuff and they're like, fuck, I'm struggling right now. I'm really struggling and I just don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Well, I mean, obviously our stories aren't over yet, but it's you can succeed. Everybody hears like the Rock story or whatever. And I love fucking anything to do with the Rock. But where he talks about, oh, I had $4.55 in my bank account when the WWE offered me a contract, changed my world. Well, that's not going to happen to everybody, but somebody like you that was struggling with addiction, you came out the other side and just, you know, 5 or 6 years later, I mean, look at you now. That can help somebody so much because it's a realistic story, even though I doubt they could probably be as funny as you.
Well, and see, man, here's the thing. Even when I, dude, when I sobered up, dude, it was actually when I met my wife. See, I'd moved down to Columbia, South Carolina, because I was engaged to another girl. Okay. So I worked at the hospital down there where I met the girl who is my wife now. Well, I sobered up right around that time, left my fiance for my wife, who was Leah, and I got fired from my job, man. Now, the girl I broke up with got me the job I had. Well, I had never gotten in trouble, never been wrote up, but after I broke up with her, somehow I got fired. Okay. So I get fired. Well, my wife or girlfriend at the time, she had a house with two roommates. Okay. Well, the two roommates were helping her pay the bills and all that stuff. The house, of course, was in my girlfriend's name. Well, the two roommates just leave her with all these bills. All right. Here I am fired. So I move in with her and I go get a job as an electrician's helper. Okay. Dude, I am making $8 an hour. I have never worked with electricity in my life. I'm getting shocked every day, electrocuted, not knowing what I'm doing. All right. And I mean, the first year me and her were together, it was rough, dude. I mean, it was rough. I was sobering up. We were broke. We had nothing. I was scraping change from my ashtray to try to pay for gas. And slowly through that 6-year process, through being tough as hell and just working our butts off, got out of that. But I mean, you know, it's not an easy road, dude. I mean, you know, yeah, I sobered up, but right there when I was beginning to get sober was the worst, one of the worst times of my life. You know, I could have easily said, I'm going back to pills.
Well, I believe this to the day I die. You said you had to grow up going to church and everything like that. I'm a Christian. I'm not an example setter, but I'm a Christian. I love the good Lord and everything Jesus done for me. But I believe that there's a lot of people like me and you that are probably hard-headed. I'm going to guess you're just as hard-headed as I am and stubborn.
Yeah.
I think that the good Lord, before he blesses you, he almost breaks you. I think he puts you to the test to where if you're going to receive a real blessing like your wife and your son and everything, I think he tests you so tough to see if you're worthy of the blessing or not.
Well, I'm going to tell you, dude, there was never a time in my life ever where I honestly would say, you know, God, what's the deal here? And basically to the point where I was mad at God, dude, pissed off, like, you know, like to the point of where I'm like, I'm just done with that. If this is all happening to me, there's no way that somebody up there would allow this to happen. I was to that point. I'd never been like that in my life. I mean, I was so bitter. Which it could have been my brain coming back, my synapses firing off too from where the drugs was coming out of me. But you're right, man. I mean, it put us to the test. But dude, I'm gonna tell you, it made mine and her relationship so freaking strong, man, because we went through that at the beginning and we have the best. I'm telling you right now, I have got to have the best marriage in the world. I mean, I am very fortunate. She's the hardest working woman. And she puts up with my bullshit all the time. Like, she is the total opposite of me, man. She is so chill, so laid back. And here I am 100 miles an hour, high wired. And she is just alone for the ride. But, you know, I've told her several times, I'm like, baby, you can quit your job. She's an RN. I'm like, you can quit your job. You can just stay at home with the kid. What did she do? She's in nurse practitioner school now. You know, she's got another year left. She is just, she's one of them INDEPE, you know, the independent girls that don't need no man. That's what she is, dude. She don't need me, you know, but she is a hard worker. And I was very, very lucky to meet her because we've toughed it out and it's made us a very, very strong couple.
Those things that are forged in fire are hard to break, sir.
Yeah. 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 Well, I'm lucky to have her. That's for sure.
You know, most folks that do social media, their wives or their husbands usually can't stand it, but it sounds like your wife is very supportive of everything that you do.
Dude, 1,000,000%. I mean, now I tell you, when this all first started, I called her. This probably wasn't the best idea, but I called her 5 minutes before I was going out on stage one night. And this wasn't when I was making like great money, but I called her. I said, hey, I quit my job at the hospital. And she was like, oh, okay, and hung up. Well, 10 seconds before I'm supposed to go out on stage, in front of a crowd of 3,000 people, she calls me back crying. I can't believe you quit your job, you know, all upset and everything else. And I'm like, okay, baby, it's all right. You know, because I've always tried to be one of those people that I don't take a step forward unless I know it's the right step forward. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't try to do anything blindly. And so I quit that job and I worked my butt off. And now, you know, we're very fortunate, very blessed to have what we have, and I'm making good money and all that stuff. But that was the only time she was skeptical of me. But then after she saw that I will do anything in my power to make sure my family's got what they need, she don't question anything I do anymore. So
Man, that right here is why you're going to be around for a long time. You're just starting. And having that train of thought, dude, and that mindset is why you will be around a hot-ass minute. And when all these other social media folks flare out, you'll be doing something else. You won't be stuck to just making videos. You'll be able to do whatever the hell you want, and you'll be able to do it soon.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing, man. That's the whole reason I went to stand-up, too, man, because what if the internet crashes?
Yep.
You know, what if these videos don't pay no more? Then what's these old social media boys going to do that can't get on a stage and throw a joke out? So, you know, and I, like I said, man, I am so competitive that I just want to be the best at what I do. You know, there's no way I'd get on a stage if I didn't think that I was good enough to get on a stage. You know, there's plenty of people that'll do it, you know, but I just, and of course, doing shows, man, it was like this weekend, I had four shows in Greenville, South Carolina, all four of them sold out. I didn't even know I had three shows in Greensboro, March 5th and 6th. I thought I had, I think, one show, and my buddy calls me and he says, "Hey, man, I just want you to know all three of your shows sold out." I said, "Well, I didn't even know I had three, but hey, that's cool, you know." So we added a fourth. So to know that my shows are selling out, you know, once Corona's gone, man, we're really going to be touring all over the U.S. and in some big venues. And that, like you said, going on stage in front of people is the biggest adrenaline rush you'll get.
People don't understand it. Well, I think that's how we end this. I know everybody's already knowing where your social media handles are, but drop them real fast. Let them know where they can find you on social media in case they're living under a rock and ain't heard of you.
Yeah. Well, you can find me on Facebook, Ginger Billy. Find me on TikTok at, I want to say the Ginger Billy or Ginger Billy. It's one of them. It's 3.8 million followers. You can find it. Instagram is Comedian Ginger Billy because some douche wanted to put comedian in front of it. It wasn't my idea, management. And YouTube's Ginger Billy. So y'all check me out.
Cool, brother. Well, man, I appreciate it. And thank you for coming to do this old country boy show. And hell, anytime you want to bounce some ideas back and forth off of each other, I think you are extremely talented. If you ever want to do a podcast, let me help you get it started and everything. That is one thing I'm doing. I'm finding folks off social media. How you said that the internet might crash one day. There's a lot of folks I'm reaching out to that I think have talent from me working in radio and knowing what it takes to do this. I think you could be one of the top podcasters. I think that if you did it, you'd fucking destroy it.
I appreciate it, man. I hope I gave you a good interview today.
You did. Okay. I just got to talk you into sharing it on social media now, if you don't mind.
Where you want me to share it?
Any damn where you can, sir.
Well, how do I, you're going to have to, I guess, email me and tell me how this.
I got you. I tell you what, when we get off of here, if you'll hold on a second, once I tell folks bye, me and you can stay on Zoom for a second and I'll hook you up with that information. And everybody, I'm telling y'all, go check this guy out. He's authentic. He's real. He's got a good heart. I very much, very much appreciate your interview and your time today. Mr. Ginger Billy, thank you for everything you do. And I hope you keep doing it and keep being a badass, sir.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you all for listening to Politics, Religion, and Whiskey, the Josh Terry Podcast. I'll catch y'all next time.